are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. You can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game. He is Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm feeling very well, Michael. And let me tell you why. I usually am. But I have just put a significant amount of money on the Philadelphia Eagles line against the Dallas Cowboys, which I never bet on the Eagles. You have to understand. I categorically, on principle, do not bet on the Eagles, because the cumulative crushing loss that could happen is too great to fathom, right? Like, that's too much. I have to stay independent and not be not look at things through rose-colored lens. But right now, on mybookie.ag, and shout out to mybookie, they sponsor so many of our episodes, the Eagles are only a 3-point favorite. On Monday's episode, yesterday, I told you it was a 3.5-point line. It moving down to a 3-point line is massive. Mm. Firstly, that's movement in the wrong direction. I can promise you that by this time on Sunday, you know, we're recording it at 6:30 my time, so an hour before the game. So this time on Sunday, I can promise you that line will be at least 5, 5.5.
Yeah.
Right now it's 3. I can promise you, right? I don't think it's corrected yet for Sean Lee being almost confirmed out. I don't think it's corrected yet for Ronald Darby being almost confirmed back. And let's say Teron Smith can't go, then there's that as well. And I don't think the line yet knows how to handle the fact that Ezekiel Elliott is out, right? Philadelphia's a 3-point favorite is huge, especially because now, in the event the Eagles only win it by 3, you at least push. You get back what you put in. If it's 3.5, the Eagles win by 3, you lose everything. So I'm very excited, because on that Monday breakdown pod, not only will we talk about how well the Eagles performed and how they beat Dallas, but I will also have more money because they did it.
Yeah, and what we're gonna do today is we're gonna kind of take a look forward, but before we can look forward, we are going to take a look back. So we'll be talking about playoff implications, the Eagles schedule, we'll be predicting wins and losses for the rest of the season. But the first thing that we're gonna do is, in the offseason, what we did was we had, what was it, 6 over under questions polls,
7
over under polls that we put on Twitter for the outlook of the Eagles seasons, different facets of the game. And right now we are going to revisit those and see where we landed, see how those are looking. So Ben, man, you've got all the materials right in front of you. You want to kick this thing off with the first one?
Yeah, most definitely. First one was the storyline that was insanely important, you know, in the beginning of the season. It's kind of fallen away. That was Carson Wentz passing attempts. We set the over-under at 550. Obviously, Carson had the second most passing attempts as a rookie. I believe the number was 594 or something like that. It was massive. And there was a focus from the coaching staff on bringing those attempts down. After, you know, 2 games of the season, which obviously the Eagles went 1-1 in those games, really lost the running game against the Chiefs in week 2, Carson was on pace for 680 attempts, which was obviously absurd, right? That wasn't going to happen. But in those first couple of weeks of the season, we saw 39 and then 46 attempts. That was too much, right? That was not a solution to the problem. But really, they've been able to bring that number down. The emergence of the running game has been huge. The emergence of the defense has been huge. Just frankly, they can run an offense. They can run, you know, a clock-draining drive without Carson having to throw the ball a lot. And just that alone is bringing the attempts down. Then you add in the fact that they can run the ball effectively on first down, and you have things much more balanced. Per my numbers right now, Carson's on pace for about 530 passing attempts this year, which would fit the under. You, me, and the public all went with the over, and there was no reason to believe otherwise. But hey, another feather in this coaching staff's cap, if they can get, you know, such improved game out of Carson, improved play out of the offensive line, better running game, all the stuff they've done, and they can bring his passing attempts down that significantly. That's awesome.
Yeah, I believe the Eagles own the third biggest change in run-pass ratio from last year. The first goes to the Jaguars. They are running the ball 15% more of the time. I think there was about a 9% change in the Eagles. Before them is the Bears, where they had about an 11% change. So there has been a big change in philosophy for the Eagles, especially even from week 1 and week 2 to moving forward. And it's really helped this team. They become more efficient. They become more balanced. They're harder to predict and key in on. And it has definitely helped Carson Wentz. So yeah, I'm feeling confident about being wrong in that one, and I'm happy about it. I'm perfectly fine.
All right, well, we'll go to the one on which I'm confident that I'll be wrong, and I'm definitely happy about this one as well, but I'll take the L on this one. Carson Wentz had 14 interceptions last year, so we sent the over-under this year at 18, assuming that, you know, he would continue some of his high variance play, assuming that as more and more of the offense became available to him, he may or may not miss, a few more passes, and he may or may not get a few more interceptions, and also charting everybody's favorite play, the interceptable pass, kind of thinking about, you know, he had a few drops on those plays last year. So we set the numbers at 18. Carson Wentz, through 9 games of the year, has 5 interceptions, which is awesome. And, two immediately have that off of the mind. You know, we're off of deflected passes, right? Like, he has just done an excellent job keeping safe with the football. Sure, he's had some interceptions dropped or whatever, but really over the past few games, you can be very impressed with the way that Carson has protected the football. I went over for that. Mike and the public went under because they're smarter than me. Carson Wentz currently on pace for 9.5 interceptions. That's just swell, man. That's the best.
Yeah. How does it feel to have 79% of the people that voted on this be smart, just be smarter than you, Ben?
Ask me that same question when we get down to Alshon 1,000 yards. Hey. And I'll answer it for you. How's that sound?
Hey, we are not there yet. That is unfair. I call shenanigans. But yeah, like, really encouraging signs to see from Carson. He's a bit of a risk taker. He has mitigated those risks and played really sound, smart football this season. And also the other thing helping that is limiting the fact that he's not throwing it 650 times this year. So that kind of reduces those odds as well.
Absolutely. Number 3, this one is, I think, very interesting. I think the next two in tandem are very interesting. Brandon Graham sacks set at 7.5. I took the over. Mike took the under. The public took the over. Mike, Ben, and the public all took the over. And rightfully so. Brandon Graham, like we talked about, had that incentivized contract where we were saying, all right, you know, the more sacks he gets, the more money he makes. He had so many pressures that didn't turn into sacks last year. You know, really, this is the year where it kind of should pop forward. 5 is still a very respectable number. He's on pace for just under 9 sacks across the season, which would hit the over. That being said, he still is not converting pressures to sacks at a high rate. That's still like a lower number for him. And that's number 1. And number 2, I don't really think that Fletcher Cox... And the other thing is, I don't think Brandon Graham is the primary pass rusher of this defense. I think it's Fletcher Cox. You know, the way that this front 4 and sometimes front 5 is schemed up, it's very often to make Fletcher the pinnacle, to make Fletcher the primary pass rusher, to give him the advantageous matchup. They really like the way that he plays, understandably so. And now with the emergence of Derek Barnett, which is the one we'll get to next, where Barnett's kind of woken up here in the last few games, I wonder if Brandon Graham's going to hit 7.5. I'm not he's on pace for 9, but I'm not sure it'll happen. There might be a game where he just like picks up 2, he has a great game, and then boom, he's like there. But, you know, it's kind of up in the air.
He leads the Eagles edge defenders with pass rush productivity with 11.4. He has 41 pressures on the year, according to PFF. That is insane. So if his conversion rate is a little low, you know, he's getting a lot of freaking pressures, man. I think Brandon Graham is amazing. He's been fantastic in the run. So if he doesn't hit double digit sacks, he's playing at a Pro Bowl level for me. And I don't care if the public sees it or not. I think the Eagles see it, and he's going to make some money off of those sacks. So good for Brandon. Get paid, bro.
That PRP stat, right? Second for the Eagles, I believe, out of ends is Chris Long, right? And then it's Derek Barnett, and then it's Vinny Curry.
Chris Long, Barnett. Yep, you got it.
You remember that one time you were like, hey, Chris Long's not an important veteran addition to this team? You remember that episode? That was a great time, Mike.
Was that after like week 1?
I'm pretty sure it was the preseason. Maybe. Oh, yeah. I don't remember. All I know is one of us said that Chris Long sucks, and the other one, markedly more handsome, said that Chris Long is a good addition and he's fantastic and he's going to do a lot of humanitarian things. I can see the future. Moving on to our next over under. Yeah, we talked about the rookie sacks. Derek Barnett, you know, he was picked at a place 14 overall, the third edge defender to really come off the board. And then you had so many go off in kind of that first round and even the beginning of the second. There was such a thick class there that it was a big conversation about how productive will Derek Barnett be in his first year? How does he generate his sacks? And so we put the number at 4.5, which, as we broke down on that original podcast, is a pretty respectable number for rookies. Now, Derek Barnett has gone on, and like I said, he kind of opened the year a little bit shaky. But per my numbers, Pro Football Reference has him at 2.5 sacks, right? So he is right there, you know, in between 4.5 and 5 sacks is his projection for the year. So it's, you know, it's we're walking right on the wire here. But as I kind of alluded to with the Brandon Graham thing, you know, with the way that Derek Barnett has woken up, he's seen an increase in snaps over the past 3 weeks each week, which I broke down on that Friday pod with John Owning talking about the rookies. I think Barnett sees more snaps moving forward. I think that there's no reason to expect otherwise. I think that he sees more pass rushing snaps. And I think that he's really woken up in these past few weeks. You know, all of those sacks have come over the past 3 to 4 weeks. I think he's got as good of a chance as Brandon Graham does to break 7.5 is what I'm saying. You know, I think that this second half of the season, we'll see a far more Derek Barnett, a far more productive Derek Barnett than we ever did in the first 9 games.
Well, you know who he might line up across from if he doesn't lose his job already. He could hit the over in one game alone if he lines up across from Chaz Green.
Oh, Chaz Green. How much? Okay, so Chaz Green made Adrian Claiborne $750,000. All right, so technically not yet, but Adrian Claiborne, who's the defensive end who picked up 6 sacks against the Cowboys' replacement left tackle Chaz Green, right? In his contract, one of his stipulations was if he's still rostered at the end of the season, he gets a bonus for how many sacks he had, right? Coming into the game, he had 2. If he had 6 over his career, that's 250,000, or excuse me, 6 over the season, he would have hit a 250,000 bonus. With 8 over the season, he's going to hit a $750,000 bonus.
Wow.
He went from 2 to 8 in one game. So 750K now goes into Claiborne's pocket. How much of that does he owe to Chaz Green is my question.
Oh, he owes a bunch. And I made the joke yesterday that he hit a season-long bonus just in one game. I didn't know that was actually like he made a quarter of a million sacking Dak Prescott yesterday.
No. He made 750,000.
But no, he could with the... Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying in that single game, if you just took those 6 sacks, it would have been $250,000. But with the 2 existing sacks, that puts him at 750,000 thanks to Chaz Green. So yeah, if Derek Barnett lines up across from him consistently this upcoming week, it's going to be a freaking massacre because he's just going to run right around him. All right, what's the next one, Ben?
Next one is, I think, one of the easier ones to call now that we're at this point, and kind of that was this whole setup when we did it preseason. It's Sidney Jones. How many games do you expect him to play? Put the over-under at 4. I went under, you went under, the public went under. Very comfortably say I think that'll stay the under. As much as I'd love to see Sidney Jones play, and as much praise as he's received from, you know, defensive backs coach Cody Unland and then, you know, the defensive coordinator as well, Jim Schwartz, there's no reason to activate him.
Right.
There simply isn't, especially when you consider the fact that you can get him as a restricted free agent at the end of his deal, which would be very valuable to the team if he pans out to be the round one player many thought he was. And then you have good corners. I mean, can you imagine, you know, we just picked up that veteran linebacker, Danelle Ellerby was picked up as a free agent, you know. He'll see some playing opportunity. You know, he'll push Joe Walker for starting reps as far as a middle linebacker. He's got the history with Joe Douglas, one of the main decision makers in the Eagles front office, who, when LB first came to the league as an undrafted free agent, he went to Baltimore where Douglas was, and they developed a rapport there. But in signing him, they cut Dexter McDougal, a cornerback for whom they traded Terrence Brooks with the Jets. Can you imagine the Philadelphia Eagles cutting a cornerback? Like, we've always been so deprived of and so thirsty for corner talent that we rostered too many, and you know, we would constantly make moves to bring in more. Now we're cutting a corner. It's amazing. The fact of the matter is, with Patrick Robinson, Rasul Douglas, Jalen Mills, and now Ronald Darby back and active, confirmed playing against the Cowboys, you know, there's no reason to activate Sidney Jones. It's too risky.
I agree. And Kemsky pointed out, like, it's there really isn't room. And we didn't expect for that to be the conversation. When we were having this conversation in the preseason and we picked the under, we thought we were still going to need cornerback help because Jalen Mills had struggled his first year. He's come along very well this season. Rasul Douglas has proven to be an NFL starter so far in his young career. Patrick Robinson, we didn't expect what he gave us. So where does he fit? There's not really, it feels like square hole round peg kind of deal, trying to force him back when it's not necessary. And I don't want to force him back with that Achilles injury. Let him heal up. Obviously, you know, as Jimmy pointed out, if he doesn't play this season or he only plays like a certain amount, then he won't get an accrued season, which might leave a sour taste in his mouth. But I mean, I could see them activating him for maybe the last few games of the year, putting him, giving him limited time to get his feet wet, so on and so forth, making sure that if you come into the playoffs and you get an injury at cornerback, that he can come in and fill that role and it's not his first action where he's drinking through a freaking fire hose. But yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine with keeping Sidney Jones on the shelf for as long as possible.
You've got coming up next, we finished off with 2 Alshon ones, right? The first one is Alshon Jeffrey games played, which was an allusion to, you know, Jeffrey's inability to get to 100% health over his final seasons with the Chicago Bears. We have not seen an issue with that, obviously, so far. Of course, you want to be terrified of late season injuries. The Eagles are coming out of the bye week. Zach Ertz back fully healthy after a hamstring game kept him out of the Broncos matchup. Ronald Darby coming back from that dislocated ankle that he, you know, sustained in week one. The Eagles are pretty much, you know, at a very strong health in the sense that, yeah, they've got people on IR. You know, we took those injuries. Darren Sproles, Jordan Hicks, Jason Peters, doggone shame. But really, the players they have active are not necessarily that dinged up, which is very good for week 11, right? That's valuable. Mm. You know, staying healthy is the number one prerogative right. moving forward, right? Going healthy into the playoffs is huge. It's massive. It's very important. So Alshon Jeffrey, you're assuming he's going to be able to hit 13 games played. Fun little stat for you, though, Mike. Besides offensive linemen, there's two players in the Eagles offense who have played but also started in both games, and that's Carson and Alshon Jeffrey. Mm. Torrey Smith has only started 8 games. Zach Ertz has only started 7. Nelson Agholor has started 5. You know, all the running backs have different starts in different places. Alshon is one of the centerpieces, one of the consistent guys on this offense, which that's a huge boost for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I agree. Having him available is awesome to see. However, the second part of that, on the flip side, the production, would you pick the under for 1,000 yards, correct?
Yeah, so we all went over for 13 games played, which is very right. exciting, but for 1,000 yards, I went under, and you and the public went over.
All right, yeah, so I went over, and I want to remind you guys to rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review. Avoid this Alshon question. It enters you to win a free PFF Edge subscription. All right, so we were definitely not talking about me being wrong on 1,000 yards for Alshon picking the over. We're gonna move on, right, Ben?
No, we're not going to move on. Alshon Jeffrey at 1,000 yards for the season. I took the under. Mike and the public took the over. Now, Mike, you and the public still do have a chance. 500 yards on the dot is the number for Alshon so far in the season. That would be 888 yards. For the entire year.
I sneezed when I clicked the button. That's what happened. My memory serves. But yeah, look, we don't need him to be this volume monster. He can get 680 and a touch for the rest of the season, not hit 1,000 yards. I believe he would be under 1,000 anyway in that scenario. And still be effective with this offense. We only need a couple big plays from him a game. The rest of the offense is clicking so well that, you know, we're not dependent on him. And I'm perfectly fine with that. We've beaten up Alshon this entire time. And, you know, it comes to a point where we understand what he is now. And the real question comes in the offseason, and we'll deal with that then. You know what I mean?
Mike's trying so hard to, like, change the narrative here. They're like, listen, like, the offense is clicking, man. It's okay. Like, you know, great news. No, not. Alshon, not going to hit 1,000 yards, I don't think. In order to do so, he would need to have some huge games. And as we know, Alshon has still not had a 100-yard game since week one of 2016 season. I know everybody's very excited about his breakout games. You know, he had, you know, a touchdown against San Fran, and then he had the 2 touchdowns and 84 yards against Denver. Once Zach Ertz comes back, it's all going back to regular. Do not forget this.
Guy's got parents, man. Why don't you take it easy on him? He's a part of the city.
He's also like 8 or 9 years older than I am, I would say.
All right. So that does it for that part of the over-under section. Thank you for laughing with us at our stupid, stupid takes. And we're going to move on to what the rest of the season looks like for the Eagles schedule-wise. We'll do some projections, predictions, things of that nature. So let's take a look at this schedule for the Eagles coming up. Using Football Outsiders DVOA, which is basically, you know, you're trying to figure out who the most efficient teams are on either side of the ball. So looking at the Eagles DVOA from Football Outsiders, which the Eagles are 3rd overall, 7th on offense, 10th on defense. They are 8-1. The rest of their schedule looks like this. It's at Cowboys, and we'll go through these individually in a second, but first Bears, at Seahawks, at Rams, at Giants, first Raiders, first Cowboys. That is an average. Their opponent average DVOA is 14th. The average DVOA for offense of their opponents is 12th, and then defense is 18th, which is really, when you take a look at the Vikings, Saints, and the Rams, is pretty much right in line with what their schedule looks like as well. So pretty even slate for these teams moving on. So let's get into the predictions, man. At Cowboys, who you got?
I've got Philadelphia. No. Handily winning that game. Well, okay, here's the thing. You know, the two big questions that remain going into that game, which we'll talk about the narratives as they go, but two big ones remain for me. Number one, you know, can the Eagles come out of the bye week with the same intensity, with the same momentum, right? You got to be able to take that 2-week period, step away from the game a little bit and come back, and you're on a 7-game win streak, you best keep riding it, you know? And then the second thing, which coincides with that, is, you know, how much does this Cowboys team believe they have a chance? And I mean a chance at the season, a chance at a wild card, not so much in this game. Because through the week, they discover, Sean Lee could potentially be out for 3 games, is what I heard.
Yeah.
You know, if they learn that Teron Smith isn't playing another game, if they learn he might be, because he's been hobbled all season, right? There's a chance the Cowboys front office says, you know, we got to shut down our franchise left tackle for a little bit here. You know, make sure that he stays healthy for years to come. If these sort of things develop, plus no Ezekiel Elliott, I think the wind's going to be out of the sails for the Cowboys, right? And so those are the two things, kind of the demeanor of these teams coming in is very important. But, you know, even if the Eagles start slow, even if the Cowboys are real feisty, this is across the board a better football team. I expect the Eagles to take it.
We'll make it easy. You think they take both home and away?
It's not that easy. Because I think, especially with the way we've seen injuries happen this season, I think if the Eagles have number one seed locked up, if they have number two seed locked up, then they're sitting starters.
Okay, well, then we'll work through it and see where we both are as far as that goes. I have the Cowboys at the Cowboys as a W, which is at 9-1.
So then how about the tough one, Bears at home? That's a big one, Mike.
26th ranked overall DVOA, Bears with the 31st ranked offense DVOA. I'm going to count that as a W. I'm sure you do as well.
I'm excited to watch Mitchell Trubisky. That's going to be fun. That's my boy, QB1, though I'm redacting his QB1 card because he has all these dumb nicknames that I can't stand.
What, like
Pretty
Mitchell?
Boy Assassin. Mitchell, his defensive line calls him Pretty Boy Assassin. Apparently in college, his nickname was Mr. Biscuit, which is so stupid. I don't even know what that is. Anyway,
I was calling him Mitchy Biscuit in the offense, not even knowing that that was his nickname, and it was to make fun of him. So
he needs real nicknames if he's going to be quarterback one. Actually, now you got that Cowboys game in primetime, and then 2 weeks later you turn around Sunday in primetime against the Seahawks in Seattle. Who are you thinking?
Yeah, with Richard Sherman going down, I mean, you have the trade-off of Dwayne Brown being added at left tackle, which helps them out a little bit. I just think that that defense isn't nearly as imposing as they normally would be, and the Eagles' road woes seem to be behind them. I'm not sure that the Seahawks can score with them. You know what I mean? I think we put it on that defense. I think that defense is not, you know, your daddy's Seahawks defense per se. So yeah, I'll go with the W for the Eagles on this one.
Yeah, you got to remember, I think the Eagles got smacked around by the Seahawks last year. I think this is a prideful team that wants to fight back at that. I think where the Seahawks are in the playoff picture is obviously crucially important. Seahawks have a Monday night game against the Falcons coming up in Week 11, which is a huge one, right? Because let's say Seattle loses that, right? They're at a tenuous second in the NFC West right now. It's 6-3, right? They could fall behind the Rams really quickly, and then things start to get a little bit wonky. And so, you know, I think the Eagles will head into Seattle, you know, again on a primetime night with a lot of intention on winning that game. And you're riding a 9-game win streak at that point. You're 10-1. So I think, I think they win Seattle as well.
Yeah, and I think if there is a game that I'm most concerned about as of right now, it's with the first-ranked DVOA at the Los Angeles Rams the very next week. They have been playing some fantastic football, and with all the storylines behind Goff and McVay and everything like that, I think that defense is really playing well. So I'm going to chalk that one up as an L. So that would put us at 11-2 so far.
I agree as well, where I say this is the one about which I'm the most concerned, most certainly. This is another one, you know, I've been chatting up storylines this whole time, but this is the one where I think storylines is huge. Rams coming into this game will have faced the Vikings on the road next week. They'll take the Saints at home, and then they'll have the Cardinals on the road. And the Cardinals aren't, you know, they should beat the Cardinals, but the Cardinals are usually a tough play, right? Like, the Cardinals took Seattle blow for blow for 4 quarters, and they had no business doing that, right? They had a backup quarterback, and it was Drew Stanton. You know, Bruce Arians' team will always throw blows with you. And I know, you know, people are saying this and then thinking back, all right, the Eagles played the Cardinals and it wasn't no thing. But still, like, you know, like, that's a very well-coached team. And, you know, in a divisional game at home, they'll come to play.
Yeah.
Right? And so the Rams have a very difficult 3-week slate.
Yeah.
And then they find Philadelphia. And then after that, you have the Seahawks, right? So 5 weeks, just very tough for the Rams. Really depends on what they're like coming in. You know, they could very easily be a game for first seed, period, in the NFC. And in the event that it is, I like Philadelphia a little bit better, simply because you got a second-year quarterback and a second-year head coach against a first-year head coach and a second-year quarterback, you know. And then I think that the Eagles have an advantage in the trenches on both sides, which I talked about a little bit on the last pod. I think if the Rams are coming in and they've dropped a couple on that slate, I think you could see a much more motivated Rams team to pick up ground, and that would be a little bit scary. That's the one where I want to call it a win right now and just take the Eagles as 15-1 going all the way home, but I'll give it the loss 14-2.
Yeah. Next up is the Giants. W, big time W. I don't care if it's on the road or not. We're winning by...
The question is, which head coach are we beating and which quarterback? Prediction right now. Who do you think it's going to be?
I really think that the Giants want to find out what they have in Davis Webb. And I think they need to do it now, because if not, and they're not impressed by Davis Webb, or they don't know what they have, they're definitely taking a quarterback in the top five. I think now is the time to find out. And I think it may be a little earlier than what they expected. You got to know what you have in that guy before you come into the draft. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I absolutely would agree. I would also say that, and I'm not positive as to why, but Davis Webb was inactive against San Francisco. Geno Smith was the backup quarterback.
Oh, my God.
So I'm not positive that they even are making, you know, Webb active on game days. Again, he could have been injured. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm betting that the Eagles put a beating on interim head coach Steve Spagnuolo and Geno Smith. That's my prediction.
I like that. I like that. Okay, so that puts us at 12-2, and then we go. Then we have the Raiders at home. I have that. The Raiders are so inconsistent, and that defense is ranked 32nd DVOA. You cannot tell me you look at that defense and you're scared by any means when your defense is worse than the Colts. That's crazy to me. We're going to freaking light them up. And outside of a miracle game by Derek Carr, that depending on where they are in their season, which doesn't look all that great, I don't think they're playing for a whole lot at that point as well. I don't think they're in the race there. So, yeah, I'm going to take that as a W.
Yeah, I mean, I'll call it a W. I think that there's a chance that you see Eagles subs by now. You know, if they've beaten the Rams and we're at a point where they're 13-1, then I think that, yeah, you're likely going to see subs. Fortunately, Nick Foles is a noted Raider killer after tying the record for most touchdown passes in a game against the Raiders. Still surprising. Monday night game, you know, I don't foresee the Eagles dropping that one. You know, whether or not they've got starters or some subs in there, I think it should be fine.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, last but not least, week 17, Eagles take the Cowboys at home. I'm sure many, you know, analysts and pundits circled that game as, oh, you know, could be for the NFC East. We chuckle at those pundits. That is not the case.
Yeah, could be absolutely meaningless. If it is meaningless, we're not in a position where we can lose the one seed, which, I mean, with two losses at that point, I think we're in pretty good position based on where everyone else is now with two losses behind us. And like you said, I think the Rams are the most dangerous, and they have the toughest schedule out of the bunch for sure, especially that stretch that they have. So I'm going to say that this is a game that we don't need to win, but we win it anyway, because screw the Cowboys, and I'm not giving them that type of credit on this show.
It's
be the level-headed voice of reason for me, Ben, just to kind of make this less hyperbolic.
I mean, what do you want me to say about the week 17 game against the Cowboys? I foresee them to be somewhere around 500. They've got a tough schedule coming for the back half of the season as well. You know, they got some tough games on their slate, and I don't foresee them being in a playoff position. And Ezekiel Elliott might be back, and maybe there's a revenge game sort of, you know, Eagles are fighting for home field. Eagles are fighting for, you know, first round bye. Those are all potential, in which case this becomes a little bit different. I don't.
They're gonna run all over Destiny Vio and Elijah Quayles and call it a W.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, there's that reality where, yeah, like, you know, the Eagles are 13-2 coming in, 12-3, and they're trying to fight for seeding, and the Cowboys now more healthy with, you know, with Zeke off suspension as well, want to play a spoiler, in which case that could get tough. You know, we'll talk about that when the time comes. Right now, let's just call it arbitrary burn game, because it's more fun that way.
Yeah. So overall, man, if they play the starters, I think they're 14-2. I think you have them as 14-2 as well with that loss, the only loss we predicted coming to the Rams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, I'll put it to you this way. Let's draw it up, best case scenario, not necessarily record wise, but just like what the rest of the season looks like. All right, so best case scenario, yeah, Eagles go into the playoffs with a 14 game win streak. What you'll see from them in the rest of the regular season is sound drubbings on the Cowboys, on the Bears, on the Giants, on the Raiders, on the Cowboys again. Those five games shouldn't be a problem. That two West Coast stretch, big prove it, big litmus test sort of a situation. In that Seahawks game, I think that could be Carson's best game of the year. I think that Seattle defense doesn't nearly have the teeth that it once did.
Yeah.
I think that it's kind of held a little bit by duct tape. And obviously, I'm talking about my Super Bowl prediction team over here. And yeah, without Richard Sherman, you know, Carson could be throwing the ball Byron Maxwell, which would just be oh so sweet.
Amazing.
You know, so I think that'll be one of the offense's best games. I think that they'll really, you know, rack it up. And then that defensive line should eat against Seattle. And then for that Los Angeles game, that's one where I expect some of the veteran leaders of this Eagles team to kind of take a young a Los Angeles team, probably take them for four quarters. It'll be a tough game, but that should be a playoff sort of atmosphere. And that'll give us a good understanding of where the Eagles may or may not be in the playoffs. Eagles going to playoffs 15-1, first overall seed, best record in the NFL with a first round bye, looking at facing, you know, the Minnesota Vikings or the Detroit Lions, you know, somebody like that in the divisional round.
And I'm fairly confident in the Eagles at home throughout the playoffs if that's the situation. We won't talk about the big game because we're not going to do that here. But we will tell you about what we have going on for the rest of the week. Ben, let the gentle listeners know what we have on tap for them.
What's good, gentle listeners? Yeah, the plan for the entire week is laid out, which is very exciting. This is the Tuesday pod. Coming up on Wednesday is the crossover. Marcus Mosher and Landon McCool of Locked On Cowboys coming on. That's going to be a very fun one. Those two guys are very knowledgeable about their stuff. I know they've got some strong takes when it comes to the Cowboys, so it'll be a ton of fun to talk about that with them. Thursday, 44-6 game as far as our rivalry week preview goes. Mike hit me up today. He's feeling feisty, Mike is this week. We're very excited over here at the offices of Locked On Eagles, getting ready for this matchup here on Sunday. Friday, we're previewing, and then the big game on Sunday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting with the crossover. You might see some fireworks here during rivalry week. We'll see how it goes. I have a lot of respect for those guys, though, so hopefully everything will be nice and civil, which I expect it to be. I will be on my somewhat best behavior.
I'm about to say, you don't even have a best behavior. I wish it'd be, Mike. Don't lie to the listeners.
To find out if I have best behavior or not, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Cock call.
Oh, my God, dude.